Okay, this is the second SEB podcast. Actually, it's the second and a half, seeing as we did one not too long ago and I
The
managed to screw it up.
third podcast, but the second will go down in history as the lost SEB podcast.
Exactly. Exactly. Let's see here. Make certain that it looks. Yes, we have a file. It is actually recording this time.
Praise Allah.
Seeing as last time I didn't bother to pay attention to whether or not it was recording. So here we are. So how you been, Dave?
Been doing just fine, actually. Had a marvelous day. Slept in. Spent the morning with my wife and daughter. Spent the afternoon playing D&D. Had a fabulous dinner. And get to spend a chunk of the evening doing the SEB podcast.
Oh, thank you. Well, this is definitely a high point for me. As you know, if you've been reading the blog for any amount of time, I am currently between jobs. I thought I had a job lined up that was going to start the Monday after the previous one ended, but through a very long and twisted series of events, that hasn't happened. Have heard from one or two other people for possible jobs in the area, but nothing that anybody's called and said, "You're hired." So I figure I'd sit around and do podcasts until then.
Well, when I'm king of the world and wear a shiny hat, I will definitely hire you to take care of my computer.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
Now,
I washed those.
I wouldn't turn down any jobs on the basis of that prospect,
Well,
but
no. No. Well, you can always hope.
stranger things have happened.
So anyhow, we covered a whole bunch of crap last time.
We did, and actually, there was a recommendation that we give a recap because the nature of these conversations are such that there's really no way that we could actually go back and recreate those particular topics of conversation. Although, if something new comes up or comes to mind on any of them, there's certainly items we can circle back to. We talked about anniversaries, since both of us had recently had one.
That's true.
We agreed that the new Doctor Who was good,
Yes.
although I've got more that I could actually say on that now that it's been, another 2, 3, 4 weeks
True.
Since that time. We agreed that Sarah Palin is an idiot, but not enough of an idiot to actually get out of show business and run for office again.
Well, I think we actually kind of decided that she was not so much an idiot as a very good actor. 'Cause I don't know. It's almost like I think the consensus was that she wouldn't give up the money to become president.
The homespun, you betcha, down home gun-toting populist, was a profitable enough shtick that she wouldn't actually do anything to try to threaten that by actually running for office and actually decreasing her income from the god-awful amounts of money that she's making hand over fist with speaking engagements and another book coming out, as I understand it.
Yeah, and
A sequel to Going Rouge.
honestly, considering how much money she is making, if she were to try to run for office, then I think that would confirm that she is in fact an idiot.
Yes, I would be inclined to agree. She's now the latest thing I was just reading this afternoon was, she's now telling redneck jokes because, she's one of
So
them.
bad, yes.
And granted, actually, if you look back at her history, some of the early pre-politics days were not flush days for Sarah and Todd, but the idea that she's now with the millions of dollars she's raking in, just kind of one of those plain folk, is amusing, and it'll be interesting to see how long she can sort of milk that for.
Yeah, well, and the funny thing is that, I come from a long line of rednecks myself, and I can definitely see some redneck qualities about her, particularly her and particularly her husband. Her husband definitely reminds me of a redneck. But I don't know. I'm not quite buying the whole Beverly Hillbillies angle she seems to be taking on here,
No. And clearly, one of the things that her ascension has done is demonstrated her real desire to, you know, move to Beverly, so to speak.
Right.
You know, the whole kerfuffle with the clothing allowance and all of that. Really, she's clearly there, and I don't necessarily blame her for that. She's definitely doing everything she can to get every dollar and penny out of all the opportunities of it that have been offered to her. Whether that should damage her street cred as just one of the plain folk, I leave as an exercise to the students.
Well, don't get me wrong. At this point in my life, if I had the opportunity to milk the hell out of something for money, especially the kind of money she's making, I would be milking the hell out of it too. You'd be so sick of hearing about me. I'd be in front of the cameras every chance I had, and I, you know, whatever it was, you know, because honestly, when it comes to that kind of money, and this is why I don't think she's quite as stupid as she comes across, is because, you know, for that kind of money, I'll be whatever idiot you want me to be.
Well, you know, you look at some of the commercials that famous people have made in Japan with the idea that no one will ever see them back home. and you really do see that demonstrated. Hey, pay me enough money, I will be whatever sort of idiot you want me to be.
Oh, man. But
I think, you know, there's also, especially when you're not just solely selling yourself as a famous face, you know, to entertain, there are and should be some levels of propriety that self-respecting people or people who expect to be respected by others or who certainly have been put forward as leaders and, you know, the face of where the party is going and stuff like that shouldn't cross.
Well, yeah, I mean, I agree with that. I mean, if you're going to play the part, I guess you should act the part. But I don't know. It's one of those things where that's an awful lot of money she's making.
Definitely.
You know, and it's got that whole crazy like a fox thing all over it, if you ask me.
Well, and then you get into the issue of, well, you know, if you were in that position, all of a sudden you've sold a book and you're making, you know, you're literally making millions of dollars.
Mm-hmm.
Do you then say, wow, I'm making millions of dollars. I can just kind of retire with this and, you know, kind of get a steady stream of income perhaps? Or do you go with the, hey, if I'm, you know, if I ratchet the homespun crazy to here, I get millions of dollars. What happens if I punch it up to 12?
Yeah, that's true. I mean, honestly, for me, my work ethic isn't that high. So honestly, it's like, I don't know if I told you mentioned this before, but I always tell people that if I had written the Harry Potter books, there'd only be one. I would have gotten through the first one. It would have been a bestseller. I would have made crap loads of money, and I would have been like, okay, that's it. And I'm going to be like, well, what happens next? I don't know. Hire somebody else to write it. I'm done.
I sold the rights to Hollywood. I'm sure they'll make a sequel.
At this point, I've got all the money I'm going to need for the next 40 years that I might live. So, I mean, honestly, at this point, I'm just not interested in writing another book.
Well, and that actually becomes kind of interesting because the difference between those cases, and maybe it's just, you know, kind of whatever floats your boat, is I see the authorship, the creativity thing as one thing. And yeah, it would be great to sell that first Harry Potter book, make a whole bunch of money, and then be able to say, hey, you know what? I'm gonna quit my job, and I'm just and I'll work on this other book. I'll work on the next volume kind of at my leisure, but or as the muse moves me or whatever, and not feel compelled to, you know, I have to crank out one a year.
Right.
I don't think I could, for that, I don't think I could quit at that point. If I did win the lottery, you know, and I think about this occasionally, mm-hmm. even though I don't actually play the lottery, which greatly reduces the already infinitesimal odds, I don't think I would just kind of sit around and watch TV and play video games all day. I just don't see myself doing that. I would probably do some volunteer work. I would probably do some creative. You know, I would work on my great American novels. I probably wouldn't do my current, you know, 6-to-4 job.
Oh, kind no. of. In my case, it's strictly a case of there are so many places I've never been that I'd like to go.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've never been to Hawaii. I've never been to Alaska. And now that Sarah Palin isn't there full time, that might actually be an enjoyable visit. I've never been to Europe. I'd love to go to Japan at least once. There are all these places I'd love to go see, and it would be great to be able to say, okay, let's go spend a month in, you know, England,
mm-hmm.
and just check it out. I'm pretty certain that I could find enough things to contain my interest that I'd be doing more than just sitting around at home playing video games.
You don't see yourself as one of those, you know, people who come into money and go, you know, bored, what to do now? Well, I know. I'll spend it all and become broke and be that tragic footnote story that the local paper will run in 5 years. Whatever happened to...
I would actually try very hard not to become that story. Because I think that story is very easy to become. I think that's actually probably... I mean, if you look at the history of a lot of lottery winners, it seems like sudden money and 5 years later it's gone.
Mm-hmm.
Either they gave it all away, or they spent it all on ridiculous things, or they blew it all on drugs and hookers. You know, it seems like that's the easy route, and it seems like it would be a lot of work not to become that story.
Yeah, I mean, you have to really. Yeah, they always say the first thing you do is you just, you know, you take the phone off the hook, and you find a money manager who will tell you how you can take that money and live comfortably off it for the rest of your life.
Yep.
And once you've gotten that taken care of, then you figure out, okay, how can I help my cousin's kids who need to go to college? How do I respond to the local charity that really needs something to help the gay puppies with cancer? Now, that having been said, I am a big believer in charity and giving back and stuff like that. And so I would probably be selfish enough to spend some of that money on some nicer things and on traveling to all those places you mentioned and stuff like that. But I like to think I would also be doing something to help people and not just the people who knock on my door or not just my family.
Right.
Although I would certainly want to see them as comfortable as I could make them as well. But, you know, you can't make enough money to make everybody comfortable, but there's things you can do to help.
Oh yeah. Oh no. I mean, and you know, being that I'm actually sort of a charity case myself at the moment, that I'm asking for donations on the blog. It's one of those favors I'd love to be able to repay, you know, tenfold, at some point in the future. But, yeah, you know, the hard part's getting the money first, short of winning the lottery.
Yeah, you know, it's how do you make $2 million? Well, first you start with $1 million,
right?
And then, so we talked about Sarah Palin.
Yep, and then did the traditional ADD thing and just took it off on a wild tangent.
Yes. Yes.
I think we did that on football fields away.
Actually, that was amazing. That last podcast, we were actually highly disciplined. We had a detailed agenda. We went down through each point. It took us exactly 60 minutes, and then we were done.
It was so good. You should have been there, folks.
Let's see. We talked about people who get offended by religious jokes and how they should simply deal with that by declining to listen to them.
Well, yeah. I remember talking about that now.
it's pretty bad. The height of the whole South Park.
The Muhammad thing.
And, you know, and of course that's actually still kind of going on. I think, is it sometime next week that we've got the official draw picture of Muhammad Day?
Yep, that's May 20th, I believe.
May 20th.
So that would be.
And, you know, it's one of those. It's a tough one because on the one hand, I know this is something that that people are sensitive about, but by the same token, everybody's sensitive about something, and if you work to not offend anyone, you will never say anything of use to anyone.
That's true. It's such a ridiculous thing to be offended about, in my opinion.
The origins of the Islamic injunctions, which have become much more stringent among certain areas of Islam in more recent years and centuries. But the goal was to avoid idolatry. You know, if you have people that are doing big devotional pictures of Muhammad, then people are going to end up worshiping Muhammad rather than Allah. It's the same sentiment that went into a lot of the iconoclasm in the Protestant Reformation, where, you know, then they went in and they stripped churches of all of the figures of saints and the images of Mary and got rid of the crucifixes and replaced them with simple crosses because people were venerating the images and not the deity.
Well, the Catholics are pretty hot for Mary,
Well, I mean, that's why I said the Protestant Reformation. I mean, the Catholics, and I can speak to the theology of all of that as well. But the fact is that a lot of people who are in a religious way will tend to go for the more familiar imagery, and so you'll venerate your local saint, you'll venerate Mary, you'll have your little household gods kind of thing, going back to older, more pagan tradition.
Right.
And you see that, you see that more commonly, and so I can understand the idea behind we're not going to show Muhammad's image because that will cause people to worship Muhammad. Going from there to anybody who shows the image of Muhammad is insulting Islam and Allah and should die
is quite the stretch. Yeah,
that's a little bit different. That's like saying, people should treat the flag with respect because of all of it represents and the people who have died on the behalf of the country and so forth. And so anyone who disrespects the flag should be shot.
Right. Yeah. No. And both attitudes make me want to do exactly what it is.
Do exactly the opposite to demonstrate it shouldn't be that case, and I'm not going to put up with your cultural bullying.
Right. Right. So, I mean, I don't know if I'll participate on the day or not, only because I can't draw worth a crap. But I guess one of the things people have been doing is drawing stick figures and just writing Muhammad next to it. And they're such happy stick figures, too.
Well, yeah. And that's the thing. I mean, you can do it. You don't have to show, Muhammad as, some horrible, awful, unearthly, sinful creature. You can do it in a way that just... although it reminds me of the old D&D stuff where if you invoke the demon by name three times, you have a certain percentage chance that they'll appear, and so have people going Orcus, just to either A, show that they weren't afraid, or B, because they figured they could actually take Orcus on and get all of his mad treasure.
Well, are you talking second edition rules, or are you talking fourth edition rules?
Well, this was I
or original, I should say original Advanced Dungeons and Dragons.
Well, the whole original AD&D.
Because I remember playing that as a young man, and the old joke was you came across a dragon and it'd be like, don't kill it, just wound it, so we can follow it back to its lair. Because they weren't much of a threat once you got up into the teens in terms of levels. So. And then then later they kind of became a bigger deal.
Well, that's always been the trick, is trying to kind of, come up with things that will be a reasonable threat and make sure that the people don't level so quickly and get so much amazing stuff that the world simply becomes, a place where they kind of follow along monsters to get their get back to their lair and get all their treasure. It was, as someone who did a lot of home rolled rules, in college. Yeah. Other people were spending, you know, late hours in college going out and partying. I was sitting back in my room rewriting spell books for the next meeting. That tells you what sort of crazy nerd I was. Fortunately, my roommate was as likely to be doing the same thing. So, you know, we got along well.
It worked out well.
But, you know, I had the one classic player who would do things like, you know, over the summer would run his own solo dungeons with his characters to level them up and get all sorts of and then would expect to be able to walk into someone else's game and say, oh, I've got this character. Yeah, he's got a staff of lordly might and, you know, a Vorpal Sword of infinite slaying and, you know, +5 rings on every finger. Like that. But I got them all legitimately because I defeated all the monsters that had them. Dude, this was the only person I ever had to actually kick out of a D&D game that I was playing.
See, now I have to admit, the guys that I grew up with, and we did most of our heavy playing in our teenage years, and obviously you've got a better control over it than we did, because the weekend would come around, and literally it would be marathon 8, 10, 12-hour sessions on the weekend at somebody's house. And I played with a bunch of munchkins. I mean, these guys were rules lawyers like you wouldn't believe. But I never had anyone try that.
Well, and what made it even more crazy, I had to kick this guy out of my campaign finally because he was cheating on die rolls all the time. He got 5% chance critical hits on a regular basis.
Right.
Except when you actually made him roll his dice in the middle of the table where everyone could see them.
Right.
But since it was a group of about 12, which was just insane in and of itself, all too often he would make the die rolls and no one would see them because everything else was going on. I actually had to eventually boot him out of the campaign, which actually made him actually a rather interesting NPC to have in the game. He actually moved to the plot.
Yeah, he's going to be a supervillain at that point.
Well, he stole the MacGuffin and teleported away. So then they had to pursue him. Anyway.
Yeah. And I realize we're completely off topic again here, but
there's a topic.
Did you have the epic arguments over the rules? Where everything would grind to a halt for 20 minutes while people sat there with their books flipping back and forth.
You know, it helped that, again, most of the gaming that we actually, there were three guys, for 2 or 3 years in college, there were three of us that were GMs, and we literally alternated one weekend to the next. We had Friday night games that would usually start about 6 o'clock and would run until a majority of the players had fallen asleep.
Right.
Or until, you know, there were times we played until dawn or thereafter. And so we were able to rotate, and each of us actually rolled our own rule systems. And we actually, you know, you used inspirations from other places, and we had our own rule systems. So we weren't actually playing, honest to God, AD&D. Now, we stole all the monsters, and we used a lot of the spell names. We kind of crafted the way we had our own rule system.
We ignored large swaths of the rules, too. I mean, you know.
So we avoided a lot of the rules lawyering because it was sort of like, well, who's the ultimate judge of what the rule is? Well, it's the GM, and isn't that convenient? Now, it did usually mean that I spent at least the first 15 minutes of each game handing out the errata from rules that needed to be tweaked from how they didn't work well last time. But we kind of did skirt that. I mean, now in more recent years, I play a lot of indie games, and so we spend a lot of time. We do spend probably more time than is healthy sometimes going through the actual books. But even then, it becomes less, well, how do I get away with this than what's going to make the best game, or what makes the most sense, or what do the rules actually say? Because this is kind of ambiguous here.
Yeah. Well, I mean, once we got into our 20s. We got more into that kind of mode, you know. Early on, especially in our younger teenage years, we were definitely the hack and slash type of role players. I mean, no attempts to play in character at all. we were lucky if we stuck to alignment half the time, you know. And you know, we'd ignore large swaths of the rules, like, you know, weight rules, Nobody sat down.
Oh, God, did anybody actually play with encumbrance rules?
No. I don't know anybody that ever did.
They were... Talk about stuff that, if you want to play a simulationist game, makes perfect sense, but nobody ever does because it's just absolutely no fun.
Right.
I mean, it's bad enough in video games where you have to say, oh, I've only got X many slots, and how do I fit all the quest things that I'm gathering and have ammo and have the weapons. But in a tabletop paper and pencil game, it's a nightmare.
Now, here's a question that'll really establish just how big a geek you were back then. Mm-hmm. Did you ever adapt a favorite movie to your Dungeons and Dragons roles?
Ever adapt a favorite movie? No, but I occasionally pulled in characters from a favorite movie into it. I once wrote a novel based on a gaming character, or started writing a novel based. Actually, no, I started writing a campaign. That's what it was. That. was going along, and I had a great idea, and this was just going to be fabulous, and I was about two-thirds of the way outlining it, and I realized I was ripping off Star Wars. I was like, crap. So I wadded that up and moved in a completely different direction. But
I actually sat down one time and created up a bunch of rules and stats and items and a really stupid explanation so that we could actually have our characters end up in the world of Tron. I had rules for light cycles. I had rules for disc fights.
That's funny.
I spent, I think, the better part of a month working on it. And now when I look back at it, I'm like, wow. Wow. I mean, you don't get much geekier than that. Trying to take, a computer sci-fi movie and shoehorn it into Dungeons and Dragons.
So I have to ask, are you excited about the new Tron movie
coming out? I am absolutely thrilled about the new Tron movie coming out. Everything that I've seen so far, which obviously isn't a whole lot, but I mean, from what I've read, with the interviews and the behind-the-scenes stuff, there's still a chance it could suck. Disney seems pretty confident about it. They're already planning a sequel and a TV series and so on, and so I'm wildly optimistic, and I'm hoping they don't, because I really loved the first movie. I mean, what was it, 1982?
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, so I would have been... let's see, junior high, high school, one of the two, not sure. I think junior high still. All I remember is that going to the theater and just being blown away by it. And I was already a computer geek by that point in time anyway. And I had all the magazines that talked about it and all the video game. There was only one video game magazine back then. That was Electronic Gaming Magazine. And they had big articles on it. And, they had to use, high-end, they had to borrow high-end computers.
Oh, yeah. Well, they had all sorts of different houses doing each of the different kind of scenes or effects, which is why they all looked so different.
Right. And it was just, your TV screen doesn't even have enough lines of resolution to render this particular light cycle, and it was like, oh, my God, I just ate it up. So the idea of them going back with today's technology and redoing the story. Although there was that whole, how the hell do you explain it in light of like the internet and everything? And I guess the way they're getting around that is, well, it's a closed server. So
it's a closed system. Yeah. Right.
So, which works,
I have to confess. I mean, I loved the visuals. I loved all the different elements of the movie as I mentally look back on it. And it's probably been 15 years probably since I've seen the movie.
Mm-hmm. I have it on DVD upstairs.
I have to confess, the actual plot involved never struck me as nearly as interesting as the cool whiz-bang effects.
Well, watching it years later, it's got plot holes you could drive a truck through, but...
it's
one of those things where I guess the whole... nostalgia effect kicks in after a while, and you're like, you know, I just don't care. It was one of those movies that gets a free pass. It's kind of like Armageddon. You know, Bruce Willis. Never saw Armageddon with Bruce Willis? Yeah.
Mm-mm.
Huh. That's interesting. I think you're one of the few people I know that hasn't seen it. Anyhow, you know, big asteroid movie. Completely implausible.
Right.
Full of nonsense. Love the movie anyway. Don't know why. Couldn't tell you. It's not that great a movie, really. When you sit down and look at it and we really analyze the plot and everything, it's really kind of stupid. But, yeah, I don't know. I get caught up in it. You know? So, I like Armageddon. It's one of my guilty pleasures.
Again, thinking back on Tron, I'm just kind of thinking of the actors who were in it. I mean, yeah, you had Jeff Bridges, Bruce Boxleitner, Peter Jurassic. A lot of people who ended up doing a lot of stuff, you know.
David Warner.
Who've had careers since then, which is fairly remarkable.
Yeah, David Warner was in it.
David Warner. I knew there was another big name. I loved David Warner.
Oh, yeah.
Of course, I love David Warner in pretty much anything. Ultimate Evil in Time Bandits.
Yeah. Yep. Time Bandits was a big movie with us, too.
I feel good. Sorry, sir. It'll pass. yeah. I need to go back and watch that. Actually, I've been thinking of actually watching that with Catherine.
Mom! Dad! Don't touch it!
Don't
it's
touch
pure
it.
Evil!
Jolly good. Jolly, jolly good. Robin Hood.
You know what?
John Cleese is Robin Hood.
Yeah. You know what?
Yeah?
This podcast totally sucks compared to the last one.
let's see. So that was the jokes. We talked about how the Catholic Church hierarchy is not covering themselves in glory by alternating between autocracy and playing the victim in the whole sex scandal thing.
Yeah, I believe my statement on that was I have a hard time imagining how anyone could can consider themselves a Catholic anymore with what's going on. And that goes back to that whole, well, you know, the faith and the religion isn't necessarily responsible as the people in charge, but still.
Well, and I think one of the comments I made at the time is that in many ways the church is, you know, you've got the people in the hierarchy, you've got the faith, and you've got just kind of the social institution.
Right.
And I think it's in the latter two that you have, you know, that's why you still have anybody showing up on Sundays. Because I think so much of the credibility and the faith, especially anything outside of the local, you know, people will tend to, you know, identify with their local priest, you know, as part of the local parish. And then as you get into wider concentric circles of, you know, who's the diocesan bishop or archbishop, you know, the local country, and then the church hierarchy back in at the Vatican, I think a lot of the fondness and except maybe when you get up to the top and you have a lot of people who are very, very, as an individual, attached to the Pope because he's the Pope. And at least for some popes, and I don't think the current one has this, you know, he's sort of a charismatic figure.
Yeah.
So, I mean, everybody loved John Paul II. I mean, he was just, you know, people, you know, and that's why he's on this big fast track for sainthood, is that he was so popular. My understanding, kind of looking at his regime versus the regime of Pope Benedict, is that he was actually not a very good administrator. He was great as a charismatic figure and going and visiting countries, and people loved him. But in some ways, a lot of this stuff that went on with the scandals wasn't helped by the fact that he didn't exercise a lot of control over the hierarchy.
Yeah.
And the irony is that actually Benedict has done a lot of stuff structurally and institutionally to try to address some of these problems. He just hasn't been real good at managing the stuff that's bubbled to the surface since he's taken over.
Well, it doesn't help when, you know, you get documentation coming up that seems to indicate that he, as a bishop or cardinal, I don't remember which, had personally signed off on not excommunicating somebody who they knew was abusing kids.
Yep.
I mean, that certainly doesn't help.
No, it doesn't. And, you know, it goes to part of the difference between, you know, being someone kind of being an administrator and being the inspirational figure. And just to throw in a little bit of Catholic trivia, you know, bishop is a level of ordination. Cardinal is actually a job title office. So anybody can be a cardinal. Any in theory, you don't have to be a bishop to be a cardinal. You could, any Catholic layperson could be a cardinal. It just means you've been tapped as being a cardinal by the Pope.
I see.
Whereas bishop is an actual, you are actually ordained as a bishop, just like you were ordained as a priest.
I see.
Now, the fact
here, I thought it was more
99.99% of all cardinals are actually bishops, but it's sort of the difference between being a vice president and being the guy who stands at the podium and talks to the press.
Okay. Yeah. Well, and honestly, I have to admit, I've never really sat down to figure out how the hierarchy works properly. I always assumed that it was kind of like the military. Start off as a priest, work your way up.
Well, and in a lot of ways it is. The difference is that, you know, being a cardinal is like being on the Joint Chiefs of Staff or something like that. It's kind of a staff type of position. It's what you're doing versus being of a certain rank.
I see.
So general is a rank. Bishop is a rank. Mm-hmm. Cardinal is a sign that you're working at the Pentagon versus out in the field as a general.
Okay. Well, there's our Catholic lesson
sure
for
the day. I suspect I'll have, you know, Catholics writing me letters saying, Dave, that's not the way it works. But that's how I think it works.
I look forward to your letters.
So we talked about that, and then I think the last thing I had checked off here that we had talked about was talking about New Coke, because we had just passed the 25th anniversary of New Coke being introduced.
That's true.
Just to demonstrate, we could go everything from, you know, church theology and child abuse to popular soft drinks and business decisions about their formulation.
Yep. And I think the big thing that came out of that was I put forward, and I believe this is a popular rumor. I can't talk tonight. Can't get anything out of my mouth. But I believe this is a popular rumor. The idea that the new Coke was actually a scheme or a cunning plan on Coca-Cola's part to reintroduce Coke Classic, but using high fructose corn syrup instead of sugar.
Right.
That's the big conspiracy theory that everybody has about it. It's one that I bought into for many years. And from what I've been reading, that's not necessarily the case. It's more of a coincidence than anything else.
I certainly think that Coca-Cola took advantage of changing back to Coca-Cola Classic to introduce high fructose corn syrup as the primary sweetener instead of cane sugar or even beet sugar. But I don't think that I'm not enough of a conspiracy theorist to think that was actually their goal.
Their intent,
I think they were just trying to compete better against Pepsi.
Because again, that would be pretty impressive bit of cunning there. Let's put out something that tastes like total crap.
You know, I can't imagine any company actually willingly threatening their own cash cow.
And then we'll swap it back after a couple months.
Yeah, you know.
Yeah, it does seem
like a small, you know, a small company where it's like one or two people that are actually kind of calling the shots. I can see actually agreeing on that. A company as large as Coca-Cola is going to be enough risk averse to you know, it's risky enough to reformulate your stuff and so forth, to do it with an eye that you're going to go back and you're going to reformulate the old formulation as an intentional plan. I don't give them enough credit to do that.
Yeah, and on top of that, to this day, there are still executives at Coca-Cola that wave the taste test studies.
Trying to justify the decision,
it's
yeah.
No, really? People loved it. We could have sworn that people would love it.
You know, I've been involved in
Focus testing. That's what I'm thinking.
Consumer focus testing sort of things. There's a couple of companies that work here in Denver, because I guess Denver is sort of a Midwest-ish, Mountain West-ish center for that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've been there, and I've seen the dynamics in enough of these focus groups to know that there's some useful stuff you can get out of them, but they tend to be sort of anecdotal. You know, people raising particular issues that are of interest in considering what you're doing with your ad campaign or business direction or motto or logo, but trying to treat them as kind of a popular democracy doesn't work.
Yeah.
The dynamics of a focus group just aren't there. They aren't realistic.
Yeah. I wouldn't know. I have no experience with focus testing whatsoever.
it's an interesting experience because, you know, you, on the one hand, it's sort of like, you know, yeah, they kind of all get you into a meeting room and they throw some slides up on the wall or they talk about this and that, and they've all got very carefully prepared questions. And there's a big mirrored wall because they've got cameras running on you so that they're recording all of your facial expressions and whether you're interested in what you're hearing and stuff like that.
Well, it seems like the expense involved in getting a big enough sample size to actually get any useful information out of it would be prohibitive. I mean, most focus groups, as far as I'm aware, what little I know about focus group testing, are relatively small samples of people.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I don't know. It seems like something is subjective as taste, you know. You would need a larger sample to really get a feel.
And they suffer from the same problems as, you know, internet polls and juries, in that they're not necessarily a representative sample. I mean, basically, the people who participate are folks who are available to go and participate,
right,
who are motivated enough by the stipend that they're given to actually go to the trouble of going down to the building at a certain time and are available to do so.
So mostly hobos and unemployed bloggers, right?
Or people who are retired. Yeah. and it's one of the problems that we have or we have had. I mean, some states have changed their policies on this, but that we have had with, you know, jury duty. You know, if you've got a thing where, you know, people, where it's most available and most amenable to folks who are unemployed or retired, then you're going to get, you know, a skewed sample of people to actually, you know, sit in judgment on folks.
Right.
In the state of Colorado, actually, it was very different. California had basically anybody who wanted to get out of jury duty at the time when I was living there. You know, basically you just got your employer to write a letter to the county saying it would be a hardship on our company for this person to be out on jury duty, and they were excused.
Mm-hmm.
Well, talk about skewing your sample of peers to sit in judgment on folks.
True.
I got to Colorado and, you know, state of Colorado basically told employers, you are obligated to pay your person their normal pay for up to a week of jury service. There are no excuses that you can give.
Mm-hmm.
You can ask to be postponed once. Now, the flip side of that is that they came up with this one day, one trial thing. If you're called for jury duty, you show up. If you're not picked for a trial on that first day, then you're excused.
Yeah, and I'm not certain how Michigan does it. I think it's somewhat similar, at least the last half of that. I've been called for jury duty twice in my entire lifetime. And both times I showed up and sat in their little waiting room for hours on end and never got called and ended up, you know, being paid $35, whatever, and sent home, which is ironic because I'm one of the few people I know that would actually like to sit on a jury.
I actually ended up getting selected for a jury once, and I loved it. It was fascinating to watch the whole process.
It seems like it would be.
Yeah, and it wasn't even an exciting case. It was like, you know, some guy who had been in a restaurant and had gotten an altercation in the restaurant and went outside and some other guy punched him, and it was all about that.
Mm-hmm.
And what was actually even more interesting is that after the trial was over, I drove to the place where it had happened. And the way that the location had been described by both parties was different from what I was able to observe.
Mm-hmm.
And it was sort of like, wow, I would actually have judged that differently if I had been able to actually go to the location and see where it had happened rather than relying on what was described to us.
Hmm.
But it was a fascinating experience. And I've always, whenever any of the people who work for me are, you know, like, you know, picked for jury duty, I've always been like, yeah, yes, go, you know, whatever amount of time it takes. Yeah. It's inconvenient. We hate having you out, but go and do, because that's part of what makes the society work.
Right. I'm not one of those guys that tends to do knee-jerk patriotism, but, I mean, to me, patriotism is doing stuff like jury duty.
Mm-hmm.
Because without it, I mean, you know, we complain about the court system and how nothing seems to work right, blah, 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 but then we spend all our time trying to get out of things like jury duty. Well,
yeah. Exactly. Yeah, you know, it's sort of like this is a civil obligation. And it's not a matter of waving the flag and saying, yay, America. It's like, this is how our society works.
Right.
And if we're going to make it work, we need to, you know,
participate.
Me up and participate. It's like voting. I mean, you know, you can complain about, you know, I don't like this candidate, or this candidate isn't my ideal, and that's all fine, but you can always find someone to vote against.
Right.
If you're not going to, you know, if you're not going to take the effort to actually go to the polling place and vote, even if you want to just vote for Joe Bob, third party candidate who's a wacko, or that, but that you like for whatever reason as a statement, if you're not even going to bother to go and do that, then don't bitch about whoever gets elected.
Yeah, yeah. Do your part. It's not much.
Exactly.
Yeah. Because like I say, twice in my entire life I've ever been called for jury duty. Twice.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not like it happens that often, or at least it doesn't to me.
No. And in fact, I mean, they've even made it so painless here. I mean, you get your notice, and your notice says, on the night before the day that you're being called, call this number and punch in your jury member number here that's on this form, and we'll tell you if you even have to show up. And because they always call more people than they think they're going to need.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember if I know my wife not too long ago got a survey in preparation for possibly being called for jury duty that she filled out, and then they never bothered to call her. But I think occasionally we'll get surveys ahead of time. I don't remember if there's a number to call ahead of time or not. See, that's the thing. It doesn't happen that often that I even know the process that well. I just know that I've shown up twice down in Detroit and sat in a little room and, you know, read magazines until they finally said, okay, go home.
Uh-huh. Yeah. No, I've been called three or four times, and I've only actually been selected for a jury once. And the rest of the time it was just, you know, you basically sit down there and it goes through about three quarters of the day. You know, actually, one of the times it was, you know, I was cut loose around 10 o'clock in the morning, you know, 9 o'clock in the morning. It was sort of like, oh, well,
yeah, now I got a day off.
Should I go to the office now, or should I just, you know, dial up from home and do my work that way?
Which shows that you've got a much better work ethic than I do. Because I would have been like, ah, just in time for lunch.
Yeah.
Go to the office, you nuts. I got the day off now.
Yeah, well, I had to frame it that way because, you know, someday my employer may discover my blog and throw the link to this podcast and listen to it.
Well, you know, at this point,
office afterward.
You know, if just coming to my blog outright doesn't convince people not to hire me. And I'm sure there's been several jobs in the past that I've applied for where they did a Google of my name and came across the blog and said, there's no way in hell we're ever going to hire this guy.
Yeah.
So if that hasn't already done it, I don't think the podcast is going to have any impact on it at this point.
You know, and that's unfortunate. I'll put on my manager hat at this point and say, you know, there's things I look for when I'm hiring someone. Someone having a blog where they've got strong opinions about something or one way or another, even whether I agree with them or not, that's not really a factor I would ever take into a hiring decision. I mean, that's kind of silly. Mm-hmm. Someone who has a blog or website about, you know, and here's how I cheat my employer out of, you know 6 hours of work every day. You know, that has an impact on the job. Right. You know? Or, you know, here's how I got jobs and learned things about customers and used that for identity theft.
Right.
Okay, you know, that's something. But
I mean, you wouldn't hire them just for the stupidity factor there.
Yeah, boy, that sounds like someone who I can actually take advantage of, because
not even an issue of trust at that point. It's the fact they were dumb enough to brag about it on their blog.
You know, or a lot of people are concerned, and this gets into more of concern. Actually, this even gets to another topic we could talk about. You know, the whole Facebook thing where, you know, people have pictures of last weekend. Here's pictures of me and my girlfriend at this wild party. And, you know, and the employer is going to look at that. Well,
you know, when you said that, it sounded like you were talking from experience there, Dave.
There's pictures I've taken or had taken of me of some wild parties that I suppose if someone could actually find them, and fortunately I have a fairly common name, and so, you know, that actually works in my favor in this case. But frankly, I don't care what people do after hours or on the weekends, as long as they're there and doing the job in the hours that I expect them to be doing it.
Right.
If they're finding ways to relax and unwind on the weekends or at night, more power to them. I think there's more people that could probably use that.
Yeah. Well, and it's like, now, you know, I recently deleted my Facebook account.
Yes.
And somebody asked me the other day, you know, you reveal more on your blog than you did in your Facebook account. Why would you delete your Facebook account? And honestly, it was just the fact that from week to week, you don't know anymore what they're giving away, what they're keeping, you know, private, mm-hmm. you know, and it seems like it's the company's just, I don't know, they're getting too damn devious for me.
Yeah. Talk about, if things continue in the direction they're going, talk about a company that's going to be a great white paper for business schools in the next, you know, decade or two. Facebook has done an amazing job of really making its customers, in terms of the people who make use of it, mm-hmm. Uncomfortable and actually angry over how they're being treated. And it's not like, I think that even most of the people who have gone and deleted their Facebook accounts, and it's something I've considered or thought about how I want to manage stuff on there.
Mm-hmm.
It's not so much what's there or even that people might be able to find it. Because, I mean, the fact of the matter is, I mean, Google searches can reveal a whole bunch of stuff.
Oh, yeah.
It's that Facebook has been so blatantly devious, if that makes any sense,
mm-hmm.
about sucking people in and then changing the rules of the game and then saying, well, it doesn't make any difference if you don't, by signing up with Facebook, you've agreed to make everything about your life public.
Right.
And people are going, no, that's not what I agreed to. And besides, I did it a year ago and your policy was completely different.
Right. And that's exactly my point. There wasn't actually anything in my Facebook profile, short of perhaps my address, that I haven't, you know, already revealed 10 times more of on my personal blog. I mean, my privacy is long gone. That's not really the issue. It was the whole, well, you get to come in and, we'll, you know, you get to decide how much you reveal and how much you don't reveal to everybody else, and, you know, you can use this as a place to put your pictures and blah, blah, blah. And then it was the, well, we're going to open up some of that information And but you can turn it off if you don't really want it to be public. It was like, well, we're going to open up some of that information, and even if you turn it off, that's still going to be available to a lot of people. You know, it won't be visible necessarily to your friends anymore, but all the companies
we're
dealing
with. But to
all the
people who want to buy it from us, you know.
Yeah.
I agree. As a company.
And then even if you try and delete your account, there's going to be a whole crap load of crap we're going to keep about you anyway. And we're going
to
milk the hell out of it.
Places to turn things off or hide them or whatever.
I mean, you sold me the experience based on one set of rules, and now you're changing all the rules. And I understand they need to make money and they need to monetize. And but I mean,
they've done it really poor fashion.
I was going to say, last I heard, they weren't exactly hurting for money. Now, I'm not certain what their actual operating income is, but I haven't read any article recently saying that Facebook is on the verge of bankruptcy, you know?
No. In fact, they've been offered, like, you know, somebody, you know, 3 or 4 years ago offered them $1 billion for the company. So,
right.
Wow, that would go a long way towards, hey, you were actually kind of circling back to the initial thing we talked about. You winning the lottery.
Oh, yeah. Facebook, I would have sold it a long time ago.
who needs that headache?
No. Not me.
I have considered and pondered whether I want to delete my Facebook account. And in fact, what was funny is before all of this stuff started cascading, I had talked with my parents about getting onto Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
Because it is such an easy entry for an internet presence that so many people have done it and reconnected with people that, you know, they would never find just through Google or the web or instant messaging or anything like that. And as such, it's really been very valuable, and I think still retains a value. But and so I've considered deleting my profile just because I don't like what they've done. I've looked at it and said, you know, there's nothing there that I'm particularly concerned about. I'll just continue to badmouth them on my blog. that's probably the best revenge I can think of. There's people I have reconnected with through Facebook that that I'm interested in maintaining that modicum of connection. I probably sign on to Facebook explicitly once a week or every 2 weeks just to catch up on messages or whatever. And there's people who I just only have contact with through Facebook.
Yeah, and I had a couple people like that myself. In fact, there were some folks from my hometown where I grew up in Pontiac that I hadn't heard from in literally 30 years. That managed to track me down through Facebook. And it was interesting because there were people that I barely remember. And for whatever reason, I stuck in their mind like, you know, a bad song or something. And they looked me up and they found me on Facebook and they reconnected. And it was fun talking to them for a little bit. But honestly, outside of Facebook, I don't have any real contact with them. And while it's nice to see updates from them and such from time to time, one of them, for example, 90% of her updates were Farmville or Mafia Wars. Or, you know, and it was like, well, you know, it's nice to hear from this person, but I really don't care how well their farm is doing or if they need a bunny rabbit or something, you know? And one of the things I really got tired of is having to go through the damn list. Every time a new game came out that this person would play, I'd have to go through and hide those outputs. And I eventually just hid every update from them. Now, you could still go to their page and look to see what they were doing if you were curious. But the whole point of having the feed was so that, you know, people could update it and you'd know what was going on. But this person was just, I mean, that's all they did was play these damn games. So I ended up just hiding the whole thing. You know, it was, oh, she got a hug from so-and-so. And, oh, she got a sexy heart from such-and-such. And, oh, she got a, you know, she got a kiss from so-and-so. And it was like, well, that's really lovely. But I really don't give a fuck, you know? And the thing that kills me about this, and this is one of the other things that annoys me about it, is that Every one of those damn applications is just an excuse for them to get a hold of your profile information.
Oh, exactly. Are you signed into any of these things or even to respond as like,
so-and-so
oh, by
wants
the way,
to
this
a hug.
This is going to know all about your profile and your friends and your pictures and your bank accounts and your social security number and your, you know, and so like, ah.
Yeah, it's like, you know, why do you need to have access to my profile just to send a hug back? You don't. This is bullshit.
They're monetizing it. You know, that's...
Yeah. And again, not that I have a problem with that. You know, I mean, I think my big concern is that they've got these people in, and a lot of people are like you in that this has become almost vital for them. It's their way of keeping track of friends and family across the internet. And it has become such a big, it's become such an important part of their lives that Facebook can get away with changing the rules because the vast majority of them aren't paying attention anyway.
Sure.
You know, sure. There's some of us like me that have said, finally, look, enough's enough. I'm done. I'm out of here. And are willing to give up, you know, the convenience of a centralized place like Facebook because we've got other resources. I mean, I've got a fairly popular. I mean, honestly, if you really want to reconnect with me, I am not hard to find. You type Les Jenkins into Google, and I'm the number one search result. I'm beating out a professional trombone player who's done jazz for years on a number of very big albums. I mean, I'm the number one response for Les Jenkins. I'm not hard to find. You know, if you really want to know what's going on in my life, I've got a Twitter feed. You know, I technically have a LinkedIn profile I never update.
Yeah, I think I go to LinkedIn and Plaxo about once every 6 to 9 months.
I think I have an Orkut profile that I set up years ago that I've never updated. There's a Friendster account out there that's probably wondering where the hell I've been for the last couple of years. So, I mean, honestly, you go to the blog, my email address is right there. You leave a comment, you send me an email. I'm not hard to find if you really want to know what's going on. So I really don't need Facebook. It's the fact that that they keep changing the rules. And I think I'm worried that it's kind of like all the surprise everybody expressed after the whole Janet Jackson wardrobe malfunction fiasco. Remember that? Everybody was shocked to find out that TiVo knew that was the most watched moment from the Super Bowl. And they're like, well, how does TiVo know that? You're using their damn device.
They're not tracking who's watching what?
And how long and when you're backing up and whether or not you're watching commercials?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, they're tracking all that. You're paying them money for the privilege. That's why I won't own a TiVo. It's like, you know what? If I'm spending $200, $300 on your device, you can afford to give me the damn program guide, especially when I know you're taking data off my device and selling it to other people. So that's me, you know? But I mean, you know, they're so shocked. Oh, my God, how could TiVo know this? It's easy. It's technology. They can track whatever the hell they want.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as long as it's going through the device, they're going to know about it. And I think there's a lot of people out there on Facebook who have don't even pay attention. Don't have a clue. I mean, you know what the biggest proof of that is? Failbook.com.
Yeah.
I'm sure you're aware, I share quite a few items off of Failbook.
Yes.
And it's not that I'm sharing them because, well, sometimes I think they're funny, but by and large, it's like, I can't believe this is actually out there.
Well, it's people who say things on Facebook as if they were sitting in their own home talking one-on-one with one person and assume it's not going to go any further than that. Or they're just kind of talking to themselves in the car. And it's going out there on Facebook and anybody in the entire world, not least of which are all the people who have listed as friends,
right,
are going to see it. It's going to be pasted up there and you're going to say stupid things and people are going to say, wow, dude, that's a really stupid thing to say. What?
Now, granted, the folks at Failbook blank out the names of the people involved and they obscure the profile pictures. So they're actually respecting your privacy more than Facebook
does.
But like on today's front page, there's a perfect example. I think I shared this one too. It's from, I'm assuming, and honestly, I'm not certain if which is the male, which was the female. But anyhow, it opens up with, "I love you, I love you, I love you. I'm not even embarrassed to say it. I just, I love you, I love you. Why don't we say it every day? Why don't we say it more often? I just want to go to the rooftops and scream, 'I love my best friend, so-and-so. I love you.'" And the first reply is, "Too bad I don't love you." And the follow-up reply is, "What the fuck?" And the next reply is, "Last night was really special, but we need to talk." And the next reply is, "Even after we had to clean up for an hour, I still don't regret it a bit. I give myself to you." And the reply is, "Yeah, you gave yourself to me, and you also gave me that rash. Thanks, but we're over." "What? What the fuck? I just love you so much. I wanted to marry you. Don't be like this." And then a third party comes in and says, "You guys, seriously, on Facebook?" And that's what I'm thinking. I'm like, oh my God.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean,
it's like people on their cell phones, you know, in a public place.
Yeah.
They engage in, and you just can read one side of it on a cell phone. You know, they engage in these amazingly intimate conversations as if the rest of the world doesn't exist and isn't listening to everything they're saying.
Yeah. You know, and you know, and most of these are just somewhat embarrassing, but I mean, some of the stuff, and it ends, and if it's ending up on Failbook, you know, you got to think everybody that you've ever, you know, shared your profile with could potentially be saying this. Sure. Everybody, every company that you've allowed access to your Failbook or Facebook, sorry, Failbook, Facebook can see this as well. You know, and it stuns me. I reading Failbook is almost like watching a bad car accident. You know,
yeah.
It's I can't look away because it's just amazing what people.
It's like watching a couple argue loudly in the middle of a restaurant.
Yeah.
And it's like, you don't want to stare, but you can't help but listen because it's such an odd window into lives that should be private, but people are choosing to make them really public even if they don't realize it.
For example, here's one from an Ashley. It says, "How do you get a carrot out of your vagina? Someone please help. I don't know what to do." First reply is from Ryan saying, "I don't even want to know." Second reply is from Megan saying, "Oh, Ashley, I know you did not do that. This is kind of a gross status, by the way. Ha ha." And Blake saying, "Find a bunny rabbit."
Yes, I saw that one. Part of it is that just kind of unawareness of the audience around you. Part of it is there is an aspect to internet culture of I'm not there in person and therefore I have this invisible barrier around me.
Right.
And so it's why people, you know, will be much more rude in comments on blogs than they would be if you were actually sitting down and having a discussion with them in person.
Yeah.
So I think part of what you see on these Failbook things is, you know, part of it is some people are just not aware that there is an audience. Other people are aware of it, but they feel like because they're not in person with other folks that they can say things that they would never dream of saying, you know, in the middle of a party.
Yeah, and I guess it's possible that some of these could be jokes as well. I mean, there are things that I've said on Twitter that were totally meant as a joke. And but I've never, I don't know, the whole carrot in your vagina thing.
I have to say that's never a comment I've made.
Yeah, not having a vagina, but
yeah, exactly. Well, you know,
but I've never gone onto Twitter and said, you know, I've got it stuck in a bottle. What do I do? You know?
Yeah, and maybe partly because I'm old school, partly because I'm kind of an IT person, partly just because I think about these things. But I tend to always have I probably shouldn't say always, but I usually have a really high level of awareness of kind of that internet audience. And part of it is because I know that there are people I'm not sitting in my basement, you know, as a stranger to all of these online presences. Mm-hmm. I know that there are people I know that, you know, my wife reads my blog, including the Twitter stuff, you know, my friends do, my family does. And so the things that I say, you know, and potentially someday, I've managed to avoid any sort of significant crossover between my work life and my private life. Mm-hmm. But that's been as much, you know, I've made conscious efforts not to make those connections, but I'm aware that, you know, someday someone through Google will run across this stuff.
Right.
And so I need to, you know, I try to maintain an awareness of the things that I say, because it is a public forum.
Right.
And some of it is probably, you know, more personal than I would actually just kind of mention to someone in conversation over the water cooler at the office. Mm-hmm. But I try to avoid saying anything that I would regret seeing printed out and posted on a bulletin board over the water cooler in the office.
Right. Now, and with me, honestly, I pretty much write the way I talk. Although I'm much more eloquent when I'm writing. Because I actually have time to think about it. But I don't think there's anything in the 8, almost 9 years that I've been blogging. Is it 8 years? 9 years. Almost 10 years, whatever. I don't think there's anything on there that I regret ever writing. Now, there's some stuff that I've said in anger.
Mm-hmm.
That you might think I might regret saying, but at the same time, had I actually been angry with the person in person, I would have said that to them, you know. And I don't spend too much time thinking about the fact that people are going to come across it, because after this much time, the damage is done already anyways. You're either going to look at it and see it for what it is, or you're going to jump to conclusions and not associate with me, and you know, either way, whatever.
I've long since decided that I will never have, you know, a group of politicians come to me and say, Dave, we've randomly selected you to be our candidate for X.
Oh, well,
you know, the public record, as soon as anybody starts checking into stuff, is going to include stuff. None of it's stuff that I regret saying or doing or whatever, but you know, I know is not going to be politic enough to get elected to office.
Well, I hate to tell you that you got a much better chance than I do.
Well, yeah. Yeah, you know, I don't include the word bastard into my domain name or anything like that.
Well, not even that. The A word.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, I wasn't going to say that because I wanted to be polite.
Yeah, well, you know, you don't want to offend me.
But, exactly. I mean, it's just, so there is that tension in your internet presence between, you know, being honest and being aware that it is a public forum.
Right.
And you don't want to, even if you've given up on the idea that, you know, I want to protect my potential to be nominated to the Supreme Court or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that there's, you know, there's folks out there that I know and love that I don't want to hurt by saying, you know, and boy, you know, my mom, she sure does smell funny.
Well, and the funny thing is that I, you know, I don't think, you know, I don't think I've ever said anything like I've talked about relatives in the past. Like I've mentioned how I pissed off a cousin of mine by responding to one of their forwarded conservative emails and pointing out that it wasn't quite as factual as they would think. I said it was a cousin, and that was all that needed to be said. I mean, right. They know who they were, and it's not necessary to the story for anybody else to know who they were.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I'm not mentioning
my cousin Montague Smith of 47 Street in Ann Arbor, Michigan.
But I mean, you know, it's one of those things where the point of the story isn't to make them feel bad or to, you know, reveal right. them publicly as an idiot, because I don't necessarily think they're an idiot. Misguided, perhaps, but not an idiot. Mm-hmm. And these are people I care about, and these are people I love. And, you know, it's one of those things where it's not necessary for me to be specific enough to hurt them. But at the same time, the story's worth telling, you know? And I guess I could just make up, you know, well, some random guy on the street sent me this, but that, you know, that doesn't make any damn sense. Truth is, my cousin sent it to me. My cousin pissed me off. This is what I had to say about it, you know?
Well, it's like I do occasionally post about stuff that happens in the office.
Mm-hmm.
And the closer it is to something that I really don't want to have anybody ever have the possibility of you know, either taking action against me as an employee or taking action against my employer,
right,
the more I obfuscate any of the facts about the matter. So I've talked on occasion when I've just been so frustrated about an employee matter that I've had to post something or have my head explode. I certainly scrub names. I randomize gender. I strip anything that anybody could ever possibly present in court to be able to say, well, this is where, you know, my employee or my client was identified and was right. shamed by what went on here. And obviously it showed a conspiracy. You know, if they can draw a connection with something I'm actually writing and the facts of any matter that's actually brought up specifically, you know, I deserve to have happen to me whatever happens to me.
Right.
But I take extra pains to, you know, I'm writing to write about my feelings about something, not to point to employee X or vice president Y or whatever to subject them to public ridicule.
Now, I have occasionally named people. In fact, this brings up something interesting. I don't know if you remember a while back, I wrote a big blog entry called Mike Hickman is a comment spamming asshole. And it was after this guy had contacted me asking me to remove links back to his website.
Yes, I do remember that.
And it turned out that the only reason there was a link back to his website, which was for supposed do-it-yourself home energy kits, you know, solar panels and shit, was because he had hired a comment spammer who had left a spam on one of my threads, and it was up long enough that the link back to his site got picked up by Yahoo, not only off the page that it originally appeared on, but off of several other pages because of the comments in the sidebar.
Mm-hmm.
And it took me a little bit of time to figure this out. And when I did, I was pissed. Mm-hmm. I mean, absolutely pissed. And so I wrote this big blog. I sent back a reply basically saying, not only am I not going to take the entries down now, but fuck you, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And you don't want links? Well, I'll give you some fucking links, you know? And I went ahead and wrote about it. And I wrote, I looked into the whole scam thing that he was running. It was basically, an affiliate parasite scammer. I mean, well, not scammer, but spammer. He wasn't doing anything illegal, but it was, you know, one of those scams where you set up a web page and you provide links to a bunch of other people that will pay you per click. And then you go out and spam the hell out of everything you can so that people come to your page and click on those links and make you a few pennies. You know, and I wrote about the whole thing a while back. Well, he sent me an email the other day. I haven't replied to it yet. I haven't decided how I'm going to reply to it yet. Where is it here? Let me look it up. Blah, blah, blah. This, that, another. Come on. Where'd it go? Let's see. Do a search.
Is this where we all pledge to send money to the stupid evil bastard legal defense fund?
I don't think so. Let's see, where is it? Oh man, that search came up with way too much crap. Okay, let's see here. It was only with him the last few days. Where was it? It was come on, where is it? Mike, where are you, Mike? He's gonna love that he's in the podcast now too, I'm sure.
Unfortunately, until Google actually applies their voice to text recognition to audio files, like podcasts, you know, it'll never show up such that he'll notice it.
Here we are. It's from Mike Hickman. Subject: page removal request. Hey Les. Hey spelled H-A-Y, by the way. Mike Hickman here. I just wanted to contact you to see what I have to do to have the page that you created removed. And it links to HTTP, stupid evil bastard, from 2009, September. Mike Hickman of besthomemadeenergy.com is a comment spamming asshole. I'm moving on with other ventures, and having this page show up on page one is really killing me online and offline as well. I know that you to be a reasonable guy from my first emails. It was only after you found out that I foolishly hired a third world spammer that got you ticked off. I fired him that day. Making relevant posts on blogs is not spam, but what he was doing was. Also, my reason for contacting, and for some reason in parentheses, bugging you, in the first place was very stupid. Bold-faced. I really didn't know anything about linking. What a dumb new boy. Anyway, I would appreciate it if you could remove that page. I hope the best to you and your ventures. Sincerely, Mike. Now, you go and do a Google search for this guy's name, and my page is still the number one one thing that comes up. And I avoided the knee-jerk response of sending back a tough shit. And it's one of those things where it's like, you know, on the one hand, I sympathize. You know, maybe he really is the idiot that he's portraying himself to be.
And you know, and it's kind of almost apologetic.
Yeah,
you know?
Kinda.
And yeah. And if he really is kind of moving on to something new, you know, I could see his desire. I could see him as someone who's sincerely sorry and wanting to kind of move on from there.
Maybe.
I could also see him as, I need to move on to something new to make money, and this darn web page
keeps coming up.
Keeps coming up. What am I going to do about that?
You know, and I'm not one to tend to take things down without good reason. And my initial thought is to reply back with, is anything I said on the page untrue? Other than the opinion stuff like, you're an asshole. If you can point to something and say this is factually untrue, I will change that part of the page. But taking it down, the fact that it's causing you grief is part of the reason it went up.
Yeah.
Was because I thought people should know you were being an asshole, that you were part of the comment spam in general problem, that you were engaging in technically legitimate or technically legal, but not necessarily legitimate business practices, you know, that, cause I mean, his page was not only just for homemade energy products. He had a whole bunch of them for pet products. He had, and he was ripping off the dog whisperer in the process, because he had mypetwhisperer.com and mycatwhisperer or catwhisperer.com and mydogwhisperer.com. I mean, take X and put whisperer next to it, and he had a web page, and all it was affiliate links. It was all stuff like, you know, here are good websites to go to for information, blah, blah, blah. But he had, and I think I posted the disclaimer, as I recall, this huge disclaimer basically saying that I'm not responsible for anything on any of these other pages. We're simply a review site, blah, blah, blah. But amazingly, every site he reviewed was fantastic. You know? Top five sites, and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, I think people should be made aware of that. You know, and maybe it doesn't stop anybody from making use of his services. Apparently, it's causing him enough grief that he felt the need to actually write and see if I would get rid of the page.
Mm-hmm.
And if he's still technically engaging in the same sort of bullshit, then I have no inclination to take the page down. You know, and of course, then there's that dark side of your personality that's going, well, you know, I am unemployed. I could be motivated. But then you're like, nah, that's too close to extortion and shit. And, you know, I'm not going to, I can't do that. Still, if he were to offer, I'd consider it. But I'm not going to go, no, you give me $10,000 and I'll take the page down. You know, I wouldn't do anything like that.
No, I mean, that's a tough one,
isn't it?
Because, you know, if you're willing to compromise the truth for money.
True. You know, and that's one of those things where you kick it around because, you know, I am kind of, I mean, things are a little desperate around here.
Yeah.
We're actually going in to talk to the apartment complex on Monday about what our options are because we just signed a 6-month lease on the basis of having this job that has apparently fallen through.
Right.
And so now I got to go in and say, suddenly there's no way in hell I can afford the monthly rent. And what we're hoping to be able to do, and actually they've said they would let us do this if we wanted to. And we're hoping we're going to have to run the numbers this weekend and figure it out. But we're hoping that by moving into a smaller unit, which would knock about $300 off the monthly rent, that we'd be able to swing it between Ann's income and my unemployment until I can get working again. But there's a very real chance that I might have to try and break the lease and, you know, find someplace else to live. I mean, other than just this complex.
Right.
So, I mean, yeah, there's that part of you that's going, well, you know, I could really use the money. But at the same time, it's like, I don't know, you know, I mean, I don't know. Because, I mean, you know, it's something I felt very strong. I wouldn't have written the entry if I didn't feel that strongly about it.
Right.
And normally, I don't even bother to bring out names. The only other time I can think of when I bring up names is when people write me just idiotic emails.
Yes.
I reserve the right to publish your name if you're going to write me just, especially if you're just trashing me. You know, if you're just writing to trash me, you know, hey, you know what? It's so much fun. Let's share it with the world. You know? So, you know, but I mean, in terms, I guess I have a line that I've arbitrarily drawn in the sand. I'm not opposed to necessarily, you know, publicly exposing people that I think are acting wrongly. But at the same time, I won't go so far as to drag people through the mud unnecessarily.
You know?
And I guess we could argue over, you know, how necessary I think some of the people I've dragged through the mud are.
Yeah.
But I try not to hurt people that don't really deserve to be hurt.
You're trying to be cruel.
Try not to be cruel.
Right. Try not to be cruel.
Right. You know, and how successful I am, probably less successful than I probably should be. But, you know, somebody's got to be the asshole in this world.
Well, and if we have to have an asshole in the world, then, you know, having a stupid evil bastard to do it is probably, you know, the appropriate assignment.
Yeah, I would think so. Well, at this point, we've been talking about an hour and a half.
Yes.
So, much of it being...
For the sake of folks who have to actually download this at some point.
So, and the only reason I let it go that long was because by the time we got through all the recap, we were 50 minutes into it as it was. And it was like, wow, 50 minutes of talking about what we talked about last time. That's going to be just...
But that was the hidden lost last time. So it's not like, you know, we were saying, so last time we got together, tell us again about that guy who's a comment-spamming asshole. But yeah,
sort of our premature flashback episode.
We'll and
take
honestly,
clips from previous episodes.
The various items I had noted down here as possible discussion items, some of which have actually been previously recommended by people. We touched on one of them, which I'd actually written down: Facebook and privacy as a topic of discussion. We actually hit that.
Yep.
Actually additional material that we can actually circle back to on yet another podcast sometime in the future.
Now, note that we touched upon the subject. We didn't necessarily say anything useful about the subject.
Well, if we have to say something useful about it, we're in real trouble.
Yeah, right, we're in real trouble. I don't know. Hopefully nobody's using this for any kind of legal advice.
You know, we are not lawyers, doctors, nor have we been asked to play them on TV. So,
although I was a zombie once, not on TV though.
Ah, well, happened with all. I feel at least, you know, 3-4 mornings a week going to the office, I'm a zombie. So,
all right, well, let's wrap this up then. This has been Les Jenkins wasting another hour and a half of your day with...
And Dave Hill more than happy to aid and abet him in doing so.
I'm going to listen to this and go, wow. You know, our last podcast was so good. Why didn't it record?
Ah, we laughed, we cried, we solved the mysteries of the universe, and yet somehow it didn't get recorded.
Maybe there's a
meaning behind that.
It's almost enough to make me believe there's a God, and he hates me.
Well, thank you very much for the opportunity to natter on all this time. This is Dave from Dave Does the Blog.
Anytime, Dave. Always a pleasure. Let's do it again soon. This is Les from StupidEvilBastard.com. And hopefully you folks enjoy this. Have a good night.